And now, an Envision Financial podcast with Luke Smith on Canberra's 2CC.
Believe it or not, it is a Friday afternoon already. Aren't the weeks just whipping by? And that means it's time to welcome to the studio once again from Envision Financial. Luke Smith, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I tell you what, the weeks are whipping by. Here we are in April. It's April's more than half over now. It's just tearing past, isn't it?
It is absolutely frightening when you see the weeks skip by and you think just last week we were having Christmas holidays. And in about 2 weeks' time, mentally, we'll be going, oh, it's 30 June. How did we get here?
Absolutely. It's not very long until we'll be talking about tax time.
Yes.
But not today. Today, we're talking about how you can use an ETF in your superannuation fund to your advantage. And I guess the first thing to point out for those who may not be aware, an ETF is simply an exchange-traded fund. So what exactly is that?
Yeah, look, exactly. For some context, an exchange-traded fund has been around for a very, very long time. And at a wholesale or an institutional level, somebody like me has been using them for, you know, decades. And they got a lot of popularity post the GFC, because prior to that, I think where you have a series of very, very strong returns, a lot of people aren't overly concerned about the underlying cost of their portfolio. And an ETF is simply the replication of a part of the market. And what I mean by that is, for those old enough to remember watching the news, and just before the weather, you'd have the finance clip and it'd say, the ASX 200 was up 10 points today.
Now, I think they still do that, but I'm not sure if anybody actually watches free-to-air TV. Well,
hence the older population would. Young kids now, you don't see it on YouTube because, again, you don't watch normal telly. But the ASX 200, for example, is an index. An index is simply a collection of investments or any part of an individual market. And you can have an index of the top 200, the top 100, the top 50, the top 20, shares, international, property, healthcare, cyber. There are indexes which are simply a group of assets in a particular sector. And what an ETF does is it simply replicates the assets in that sector. So an ETF that holds the ASX 200 will hold exactly that. Now, you might say, well, how is that different to a managed fund? What a managed fund would traditionally do is they would invest in that same ASX 200 space, because all managed funds are benchmarked against an index. But what would happen with a managed fund is they would say, we'll replicate that index to an extent, and that might be to 80 or 90%. And then we have the capacity to make some stock picks and some selections ourselves, because we will give you outperformance, and for that outperformance, you pay us a fee. One of the big benefits of an ETF is cost. To give you an idea of the difference, if you were to hold a traditional Australian equity fund, say Fidelity Australian Equity Fund, right? Well-known fund, buys the ASX 200, I think it costs 0.85 or 0.9 of a percent to use that fund, because it's a structured investment and they have to trade, they have to transact, they have to report, they have to do tax. There's a raft of compliance obligations that go to let you use that particular investment. If you can buy the ASX 200 and it replicates a lot of the index with Fidelity at 0.9, let's say, you can buy an ETF that replicates the ASX 200 at 0.15. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, but 60 basis points on some larger numbers.
Yes.
Every year, just for using it,
yes,
really starts to add up.
A very small percentage of a very large number,
correct,
is often still a very large number.
Exactly. Now, you take that across your portfolio, and let's say you had $500 or $1 million, you're talking about 0.5% difference.
Yes.
Or more.
Yes.
That's thousands of dollars a year that is simply eroded by just using a particular investment.
The managed funds, of course, are funds that are actively managed. There are people there that are actively buying and selling different shares all the time to try and beat the market. Whereas your ETF, if it's tracking the ASX 200, it just simply exactly represents the ASX 200 with nobody having to interfere, meddle, buy and sell, unless there's a change to the weighting of the actual index itself. So there's very little management to actually do. That's why it's cheaper.
Correct, that's right. They don't have a lot of turnover. The other thing that I think people appreciate with an ETF is it's a great way to diversify your portfolio. So there's an example. I might buy an ETF in the ASX 200. I could buy one that holds the ASX 300. I might really like technology stocks. You can buy an ETF in the technology space, healthcare.
Yeah.
There'll be a healthcare ETF. I reckon if you went to BetaShares and said, can I get an ETF of two cockroaches running up a wall, they'd probably make you one.
That might be a little bit extreme. But the other area where ETFs have been very popular is that they're an easy way to get access to international shares. You can buy an ETF that has American share market assets, for example.
Exactly. So there's a great example for the listeners. IVV is the stock code. That replicates the S&P 500. And most people know that as one of the larger indices in America.
Yeah.
Now, you can hold that ETF at a cost of 0.04%. So it is amazingly cheap. It gives you offshore exposure as part of your international allocation.
Yeah.
And then if you wanted to tailor your portfolio and have some specific stock picks, like some tech, or let's take a Google or a Microsoft or whatever your particular thing is that you fancy, the ETF is a great way of getting the core exposure to an area and then have a satellite approach with some other stocks or some other active funds or whatever you want to build into your portfolio. But I think people need to be aware that they're not something that is difficult to use. They're not hard to get. And as I say, BetaShares, for example, have an amazing array. Now, there are a raft of providers. They're just one. But I know in that innovation space and from a product production perspective, they could give you an ETF on – you want an ETF on oils, they'll have an oils future. You want one on cyber, they've got a cyber farming one. You know, you can create a market in just about anything. And I think the evolution of that space has been wonderful for the retail consumer. And I think they're being underutilized for people that don't get advice. So you want to look into seeing if it's available.
And the whole point, of course, of an exchange traded fund is that it is as simple to buy a piece of an ETF as it is to buy any share that's listed on the Australian share market.
That's right. They all have their own individual stock code. So all you would do is pay brokerage. And if you're going to weigh up the difference between an actively managed fund and a passive ETF, because as we said, it's simply the replication of that part of the market. If you go back and do your numbers, and anybody that's read a SPIVA report would know that there is very little argument over the longer term that an active manager will consistently outperform an ETF in the same space when you consider the additional cost incurred. Now, the other point about cost to point out is the ICR, which is the internal cost ratio, which is the charge that you incur for using a particular investment like a managed fund or an ETF, is not tax deductible because that cost is taken before your return is given to you. So if you can minimize the internal cost ratio of your portfolio, and a good well-run portfolio these days should cost between 0.25 and say 0.4, you want to make sure that, you know, you've got that diversification that you're after, consider your overall risk profile, and then use these ETFs as a way to get exposure to very, very broad markets and also then control the quality of what you hold. If you just wanted to buy the ASX top 20, they're very, very high quality companies. You might not want to buy the ASX 300. So buy an ETF in that space and target the underlying diversity of your portfolio. But I think people need to be looking at their fund and saying, one, is it available? Two, what's on the approved product list? And all super funds have an APL or an approved product list. And that simply says, look, we've done some research and here is the playing field you, Mr. Member of the Fund, can take advantage of within our structure. Now, they're not all the same. Some funds won't let you use them. Some funds just have a generic balanced option and that's about it. So you need to look at your fund and say, is it available? If it's not, consider another fund. And the thing to keep in mind here is I often get people come in and say, oh, I've got three or four funds. I pay three or four lots of fees. But if you put the same amount of capital in one fund, you'll pay the same amount of fees. So now you need to start thinking about it a little bit differently and saying, Well, if I want to have an ETF exposure as part of my super portfolio and I'm in fund A and it doesn't offer me that choice, think about rolling over part of your superannuation capital to another fund where you can buy those particular investments, because the functionality of a super fund is similar to the functionality of a car. And I often say to people, a mini is not going to pull a horse float. That doesn't mean we don't like minis. It's just not being used fit for purpose. If the fund you're in doesn't allow you to buy these things, that doesn't necessarily mean we don't like that fund. But if it's one of the criteria that you want to control as part of your retirement and you can't get access to it, you need to think about going somewhere else. And that doesn't mean automatically moving everything. It might be that you've got $500,000 and you have $150,000 in Australian equities. You might just roll that to another fund and just hold ETFs in that space in that second fund. That's completely fine. So it's not a knee-jerk reaction, oh, this doesn't have it, let's leave. You might keep that fund for a range of other reasons that has nothing to do with investments. You might need it for insurance. So, you know, consider if an ETF is available. Look at the approved product list of the fund that you're in. If it's not available, look where you could go and check that where you roll over to or where you start a new fund, it does have the menu that you're after, because there's nothing more frustrating than people going, oh, yeah, yeah, I can buy it in that fund, roll over your benefits, and then find out that it's not an approved product. So check where you're going to go. Check your asset allocation. Maintain an exposure for diversity. You still get all the franking credits. You still get all the dividends. You still get everything that that index provides. So it's not that you're missing out on income. For an Australian-based ETF, you'll still get the franking credits. They still get distributed to you. So, again, wonderful vehicle, wonderful cost management, wonderful diversification. It's passive, and you're not getting a lot of realised capital gain. A big misconception I see is people say, oh, this fund's amazing. It provides huge amounts of income. What you actually need to look at with a managed fund is the dividend that you might get at 30 June is not necessarily all income. A lot of the income that's getting paid out is realised capital gain for the trades and the buying and selling that they've done during the year. So during times like the GFC, when the income dries up and you're not trading, the income out of some managed funds diminishes significantly. So if you can hold an ETF, have a passive exposure to any part of the investment world, consider it as part of your asset allocation and your product structure, because it could save you thousands and thousands of dollars over your investment lifetime.
Indeed. Now, we're talking about holding ETFs or exchange-traded funds inside your super fund.
Yeah.
But, of course, like any share, you can buy it outside your super fund as well if you want.
Oh, 100%. It's just a vehicle of investment. If you choose to hold that vehicle inside your super, great. If you've got a family trust, you've got a company, you've got joint portfolio, you've got a micro investing app for your children, great way for them to be saving into a micro investing environment by buying some ETFs and getting that diversification and keeping the cost really low, because they might be starting with a few hundred dollars and adding, you know, $50 a month. You don't want a lot of that eroded in fees. So again, there's a place for ETFs at any stage of your investment life, regardless of the structure that owns them. Any good provider will allow you to use them. Just check and see that it's available and then make it part of your broader investment journey.
Luke Smith from Envision Financial is with me in the studio this afternoon. Today we're talking about how you can use an ETF, an exchange-traded fund, in your superannuation to your advantage. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Luke Smith from Envision Financial is with me in the studio, and today we're talking about how to use an exchange-traded fund in your superannuation to your advantage. So, Luke, it's around about that time when I should be asking you, what are the key things for people to remember?
Well, I think, as we touched on before the ad break, first we need to look and say, are they available, if you're going to hold them in a super fund, are they available on the super fund's approved product list? So, if they're not, you want to be looking at another fund or another provider that you could potentially either roll over to or roll a portion of your super to buy the exposures that you're after. Because whilst it may not be in the fund that you're in, you may stay in another fund for a raft of other reasons. And we're not saying just leave because they don't have them, but consider if they're part of what you want to use going forwards. And if you do want to incorporate them into your broader portfolio, check the approved product list of where you're going to go, see what the menu is like. Most super funds now will have a listed allocation or a listed service where you can buy the ASX 300, and as part of that section of the fund, there will be some ETFs in there. If you don't want to go to another industry fund, you could also look to open a personal super fund, which will have a much, much broader investment menu. And then you have the Rolls Royces of super funds being the self-managed super fund option. So again, you need to use a fund that is right for your situation, but you need to make sure that they are available in the fund that you're going to use. Once you know that they are, check and see if there are any weighting allocation rules. So some funds will say you can use any of these things in this section, but you can't hold more than 10% of your total portfolio in any one asset. So see in the fund that you're going to use, are there any limitations? Because you might be sadly disappointed to go, I'm going to buy the ASX 200 with $100,000 of my benefit. And they say, well, there's a 20% maximum holding limit across your total account, so you'd be down to 20,000, not the entire amount. So check that again before you move, because that can result in frustration and tears. Then keep in mind that they are a great way to lower the internal cost ratio of your superstructure or any structure. And all that means is when you're comparing investment opportunities, all of the various products that are available in the investment space have a cost to use them. And the ICR, or internal cost ratio, is simply the internal cost of using the various tools that you will put into your portfolio. You might have some managed funds, you might have some ETFs. Listed shares don't charge an ICR because you pay brokerage to buy them and then you just hold them. A balanced option at an industry fund might cost between 0.6 and 0.8 of a percent. Now, that's not cheap. And I'd argue that the assumption that industry funds are cheap, it's a bit of a fallacy when you think about building out the broader investment menu with ETFs and listed shares. A personal super fund or a self-managed super fund can be significantly cheaper than an industry fund alternative. So understand what's available, understand the weightings that you can use, select an ETF that is suitable for your asset allocation and your broader risk profile, and then build other bespoke things around it. And then think about using different issuers. And what I mean by that is, if we only use products from one manufacturer, we run an exposure risk to that particular provider of product. You might take an ETF from Vanguard. You might have a BlackRock ETF in the property space. You might have a BetaShares ASX 200. You might have something else in a different space. So whilst you get diversity of asset, you also get diversification around the provider of the ETF, because if a particular house went under, it can cause asset risk issues.
It certainly can. So it's time to ask, where can listeners get more information?
Yeah, office number 6260-4749. We've got envisionfinancial.com.au on the internet. That's Envision with an E. We've got the Strategy Stacker podcast on iTunes and Spotify. We've got Envision Financial Canberra on YouTube, where you can get all of the shows and watch them on your phone. We've got YouTube Shorts. We've got the Strategy Stacker on the Tiki Tok handle. And all of this type of investment opportunity is in Smart Money Strategy, Your Ultimate Guide to Financial Planning, in all good bookstores, Amazon and Booktopia.
Indeed, Luke, thanks very much, and we'll catch you again next week.
See you next week.
Luke Smith from Envision Financial, back with us again at the same time next Friday on 2CC.